And welcome back.
Sean Jordan over here.
Hey.
Was doing a Peanuts, like Charlie Brown dance.
That was like a whole shimmy.
Yeah.
Or maybe it was Linus. I'm not sure what it was, but I
No, I, yeah. I thought Linus played the piano.
That's Schroeder.
Yeah, you were doing the...
I was doing the Linus.
Yeah. So, welcome back, you guys.
What podcast is this?
We're going to do a mini episode talking about Doctor Strange and Multiverse of Madness. It's been out for 2 weeks now, so we'll be talking about a little bit of spoilers. So proceed with caution. We'll be talking about our thoughts on the film. We were drinking the High Heaven Merlot, which also goes with our theme of wedding movies. Merlot is an excellent grape to do with weddings because it's a pretty crowd-pleasing wine.
You know, Doctor Strange was at a wedding.
He was.
Oh.
He drank martinis at that wedding, which I think martinis are a great way.
With a twist.
If you want to get absolutely messed up at a reception, martinis are a great way to do that.
They pair well with wedding cake.
They pair well if you missed your chance with the bride.
It was a vodka martini with a twist. If you do a dirty vodka martini, that does not pair well with wedding cake unless your wedding cake is very salty.
Very briny.
Very briny.
I
like a briny martini, though. I like a dirty vodka martini.
Well, I feel like you need a briny martini and then a super sweet cake, and then you've, you know, one of each.
No, but if you do it with a twist, you get that citrus, the acidity that kind of plays off the sweetness.
If you were to ask me my least favorite flavor of anything on earth, olives would be probably at my number one.
I love
olives. I would have thought it would have been olives. Like feces. But
I haven't I haven't had enough feces to really give any sort of frame of reference there.
Okay.
So if you ask Todd, do you want a dirty vodka martini or a bucket of vodka that someone shit in?
Mm-hmm.
You'd be like, give me that shit vodka.
Give me a look at both of them.
Shit infused vodka.
You're right.
That's what a mixologist would call that. But yeah, I despise olives. That's one of my least favorite foods.
How do you feel about capers?
I haven't had it, and it's been so long since I've had a caper. I don't know if I can successfully comment on that.
Like the black olives or the ones with the little
pimento,
pimento in there.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. I black and green.
Yes.
Olives.
Okay. I dislike black olives on my pizza. It doesn't really do it for me. It doesn't. I don't know.
I don't. I don't like olives on my pizza.
No.
How do you feel about sardines?
On pizza? I don't
either think on I've pizza ever, or otherwise.
I don't think I've ever had sardine.
I like a sardine in like a Caesar salad. Because isn't a Caesar salad sardine paste?
Yeah.
Yeah. I like a really good, like, sharp Caesar salad with sardine paste.
Huh.
But, no, black olives on pizza. Hard no for me.
I do know that when I'm at Quiznos, I specifically will ask for them to hold the olives on whatever sandwich I get.
You know what? I've done that. I think I've...
You've done that at Quiznos?
Yeah. The sandwich I usually would get had black olives, and I'd be like, it's, you know, not so fast.
I don't typically get black olives on my sandwiches, and the sandwiches I order don't typically come with black olives.
Mm-hmm.
But I appreciate their value.
But when I'm at Quiznos, I make a point to not ask for olives because I think their sandwiches are delicious anyway without the olives.
No, at Quiznos.
They don't need to be adorned with brine.
Doctor Strange, Multiverse of Madness.
Quiznos.
Likes a vodka martini with a twist.
Oh, okay.
At the wedding that he was attending. Yeah.
Talking about olives. I was
wedding season.
Which this movie does begin with a wedding. It's quite awkward. So this movie came out. It has been pushed back multiple times due to COVID. And so, which gave them, it's another situation kind of like with Black Widow, where it kind of affected the continuity of Marvel. It got pushed back enough that it actually fell, I think, differently from where they planned it to in terms of WandaVision. And so they had more time to kind of tweak the continuity. I don't know if that helped it or not. To me, it came across as more messy, but that's me.
A little bit. I know some people were upset with the characterization of Wanda from WandaVision to this film.
It felt forced. It felt really like stark.
Mm-hmm.
The contrast between her character and WandaVision and now.
To me, it was... okay, so it was, Todd, what was your prep? Also, wait, what are we drinking? I'm Travis Budd.
Hi, Heaven.
Also, by the way. Sorry, I fucked up the whole thing. Sean Jordan, how are you doing?
Do we need to interlude me doing the copy of the end of the podcast?
I want to interlude you doing anything, man.
We're here with Todd Wofford.
And Travis Budd and Sean Jordan.
Hey.
And so, yeah, we're going to talk a little bit. I don't have any notes for this because it's like, you know, I think we can wing this. This is
sounds delicious.
Oh, we're totally off the cuff. And so, yeah, this was a massive budget movie. My understanding was over $200 million.
Yeah. Well, how does that fare in terms of Marvel movies? I feel like that's just a drop in the bucket.
I think that's pretty standard for their movies.
Well,
but still massive.
Also, this is coming off of the, you know, WandaVision, where you had, what, 8 episodes? The thing that's great about Disney is that they have all of these, basically a soft prep for the next big milestone movie, mm-hmm. which I love. Like,
soft prep I was love, my nickname in college.
I love them doing deep dives into Marvel continuity, and I'm like, there is no way they can get through all of this storyline by having 1 to 2, maybe 3 movies a year. And the fact that they've started doing these little miniseries or, you know, seasons of shows is just great because it gives you all the leeway in the world.
Well, and it works prep on,
or do the legwork for a character to get to the next step.
Yeah, it works on a lot of levels. It introduces a character that you normally wouldn't want in a movie, but it gives you a chance to like build them up and kind of like tell you their background, introduce them, tell you what their powers are, so that when it comes to a movie, you're not having to do that like exposition of like, oh, this is my origin story of this is how I got this mm-hmm. power, and this is how I became strong. You don't have to do that because you just had like an 8-episode series to introduce that character.
It's like multiple issues of comic where you have an arc that you can learn.
Where they have how, you know, Falcon acts, you know, becomes the new Captain America.
Right. And
shows
him
struggling with the shield.
You don't have to worry about like, okay, the next movie, he's going to show up and be Captain America. And you're going to be like, oh, how did he become Captain America?
So it feels,
what
was the best? Earned.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's exposition that doesn't feel forced in the movie.
Yeah.
And it kind of lets you kind of build a little bit of character dilemma and build a little bit of character backstory.
Which, ironically, yeah, like you said, despite that, Wanda felt very forced in this film to me. That felt very arbitrary.
Yes. Well, so the thing about that is it would have made more sense. So essentially we have Doctor Strange going to Rachel McAdams' wedding, where he's kind of missed the boat, and then he has all of a sudden, you know, it starts with the character America Chavez, whose power is she ports around different multiverses.
She can travel the multiverse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is, she is a comic book character I am not really familiar with.
She's
because
very
I haven't read
recent. She came out
last 10 years, I would
for
say.
For the first time in 2011, and I think was they discontinued it? Her comic in 2018. Mm-hmm.
So within the span of the MCU, she's come out.
So since the MCU started, she has been a new character.
Yeah.
Here's the thing, like I love Doctor Strange, but to me, he's always better when he is a side character in Marvel, when he is someone that the other heroes go to, or where they're
he's
like
the flavor text,
where the stakes have gotten so high, they're like, oh my God, we need Doctor Strange to zhuzh this up.
He
does great in a team up film or team up movie. Obviously, he was in the last Spider-Man movie. Mm-hmm. Spider-Man is the exact same way. Spider-Man can do his own solo stuff, and it's absolutely great. But he works very well as well in team up scenarios.
Yeah.
The thing with Wanda in this
thing isn't in this movie,
and why it feels weird
so close
is that at the end of WandaVision, she gets the Darkhold, right? The evil book, and they kind of
Necronomicon of Marvel.
Mm-hmm, they touch on it a little bit, and it shows that it corrupts the user. If they had at the end of
really,
this
it just
movie,
makes your fingertips dark.
If they had at the end of this movie after she had destroyed it, if she would have had a revelation, she was like, "Oh my God, this is some bullshit that I had been doing." Because obviously, you know, she kidnapped a whole town in WandaVision, and then she was like, okay, this is not great. I was very upset we didn't get any Quicksilver in this movie, her brother.
Will you pronounce that again for me really quick?
Quicksilver? Quicksilver. I was going to say Pietro.
Quicksilver.
You had a little bit of kind of an Irish look with that.
We have not seen the Quicksilver.
We haven't had any Quicksilver.
Well, no, I think my main complaint for this movie, and not to say that it's a bad movie. We'll get to our final ratings at the end. But my thing is, for a movie that jumps multiverses, for a movie that jumps between, you know, multiple universes and addresses multiple characters, it's a very linear storyline.
Yeah.
It very much goes from A to B to C.
Very conventional.
There's three acts. It feels like you're in three acts, which is always kind of my main complaint, is when you're writing a movie and I can feel when you're moving from act to act to act, it feels forced.
You can hear the gears.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I love Sam Raimi. I think, you know, Evil Dead is one of my all-time favorite movies.
Same.
Wait, Evil Dead or Evil Dead 2?
2 is awesome.
Both. But yeah. Army of Darkness, Evil Dead 2, Evil Dead, incredible movies. Bubba Hotep.
Favorites.
Yeah. You feel Sam Raimi a lot in this movie. You feel his, like, influence so much.
I love that.
But it feels very, like, you can hear the gears.
Yeah.
You can definitely, like, feel it move from phase one to phase two.
To me, it's like, it's Sam Raimi, but you can also feel the strain of having to fit it into the MCU.
Into the MCU.
It's like, it has to fit this puzzle. We're going to give Sam Raimi these pieces, but you got to fit them into this puzzle.
Yeah, it's like you can feel Kevin Feige say, like, okay, you're going to end up here,
mm-hmm.
and you're going to start here.
Yeah.
Get there.
Yeah, we need the narrative to go where we need it to go. So you have freedom, but not a lot of freedom.
Yeah, you can play in the playground, but yeah.
Well, it's kind of like when George R. R. Martin talks about, like, when you're writing, there's kind of two different approaches you can take. You can say, okay, you have a starting point, you have an end point, and whatever you do to get there happens.
Yeah.
Or you can have a starting point, figure out, like, your characters, figure out what those characters are going to do logically, and then you just sort of, like, branch out from there, and where you end up, you end up.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so it goes. But when you're in that writing position where you're starting at a point and you're ending at a point, you're very much forced into, you're going to end up somewhere. You're going to have to kind of make the actions make sense for where you're going to end up.
Yeah.
It felt like that in this movie.
Yeah. So two things we can talk about really quick. Obviously our thoughts on the film as a whole, and then the big nerd-tastic portion of the second act where everybody was going crazy.
Oh yeah.
So we can touch on both of those. Really quickly, it's like, this is obviously the sequel to Doctor Strange. It takes place not long after Spider-Man No Way Home. And so it follows Doctor Strange really processing the idea of coming back to life after the blip and watching the love of his life get married to someone else. But then also
watching the Sorcerer Supreme go to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody else be the Sorcerer Supreme.
We're kind of seeing him at a low point in his character arc. And then obviously he's dealing with the continuing expansion of the multiverse, which is like this whole phase of Marvel is about that. I think that explosion of the multiverse. And so basically it's him crossing over into multiple universes, trying, like, right the wrongs. Man, that sounds like Quantum Leap when I'm saying them out loud. he's trying to, like,
holy shit, we should just watch Quantum Leap.
And Doctor Strange is hoping the next leap is going to be the leap home. But he's basically trying to, like, fix the situation, put the universe back into its order. Reminds me of Everything Everywhere All the Time, where it's like, did I say that right?
No.
Everything Everywhere
all at once.
Yes. Why did I say all the time? It reminds me of that, where it's like, you know, you have all these different multiverses and it's a very fragile ecosystem that is easy to corrupt.
Yeah, so, it's a fragile, you know, complex machine that if you mess up one thing, it's like you have to deal with all the fallout.
It's a Rube Goldberg kind of a thing where it's like it falls apart very easily. And so Doctor Strange is trying to put the contraption back in order to where it all works. And so in the process, he, as you might guess, interacts with a lot of different and new Marvel characters. And so you see, there's some fan service in all of this, but you see...
And old characters that we, you know, haven't seen in a long time.
Yeah, it's a mixture. And so this seemed to me like a obviously in part paying service to the MCU and moving that storyline forward, the phase four, but also moving, you know, satisfying people who want to see the Fantastic Four with X-Men, want to see that brought into the MCU. So it's like, here's a taste of that.
The name of that is fan service.
Yes.
There's a lot of fan service in this
big movie. Time. This is almost like an orgy of fan service, especially in the second act of the film. So with that in mind, I want to hear your guys' thoughts. So we'll start with Trav. who might have the biggest response. I was curious because I could see you going to like a, you know, road diverged in the woods. You might have loved it or hated it.
So I liked the I enjoyed the movie. The movie was not I want to say it's good, not great. I mean, it's a phenomenal film. I loved it. I'll watch it again. But there were, you know, parts where every time they get into the multiverse, it is a little weird. And I think I agree with Sean that the gears are, you know,
clunky.
You can peek behind the curtain a little too easily.
Yeah.
I enjoy Doctor Strange, but I really don't read his solo comics. If he has another character that he's interacting with, absolutely, I'm down with that.
Yeah.
There's just there's a problem with magicians where it's like, oh, they can do anything. They can fix anything. All they have to do is say abracadabra, and then whatever conflict they're in, they can immediately change. It's the same thing with the Silver Surfer on the super cosmic level. They're dealing with whole crazy worlds and philosophies, and it's interesting in that aspect. But I did enjoy the film. Like, I was a little confused because they did a great job in the What If animated universe, where I thought, I guess there's Sinister Supreme Strange from that from that series. And that's the Strange that I thought that he was fighting at the end.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's kind of what
it's an offshoot of that.
In the trailer.
Never said it exactly.
Well, he
but it's
wasn't
not the
exactly
same
the same. No,
because he wasn't trapped in like a singular.
Yeah, room and he didn't have the weird
the
cloak
watcher
or something. But yeah, there was. But when we came to the Illuminati. That's when I went apeshit.
That's when you went from 6 to midnight?
Yes,
that's
absolutely.
The people in my theater went nuts when Baron Mordo talked about,
hell yeah.
It's like, oh, we're the Illuminati. It's
Illuminati?
Like,
oh, goddamn right, yeah, you are.
So I had tried to avoid everything I could, and I was like, well, shit, Professor X is going to be there at least, and I thought they would have...
They spoiled that in one of the teasers.
Yeah, some other characters.
They spoiled the Professor X in the teaser?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I successfully avoided a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm. I found that accidentally whenever one of them popped up on Facebook, and I accidentally clicked the sound, and it was like, oh, tell me more about...
Let's tell him the truth.
Yeah.
Or, you know.
Like, oh, let's tell him
something
the truth.
Like that.
Patrick Stewart.
Yeah.
Sir Patrick Stewart.
Ruined that. Okay.
Sir Patrick Stewart.
So as soon as they had that, they had Baron Mordo. Also, like, I play a lot of Dungeons & Dragons. So as soon as Baron Mordo invites them in and then gives them tea, I'm like, are you guys drinking that?
Don't drink
like,
that.
Oh, okay. Well, you're fucked.
Yeah. That's every James Bond movie.
Yeah.
You don't ever drink the bad guy's tea.
But yeah, so as soon as they had the Illuminati and they were showing, good old Captain Carter, and then they had call sign Photon from the Captain Marvel movie as Captain Marvel. I love that actress, and I wish that she was playing essentially her daughter in WandaVision. I want that actress as Photon in the Marvel universe. And then you had Captain Carter,
Black Bolt,
which was great because she also had like a rocket pack, like the Rocketeer.
Yeah.
And the director of the first Captain America movie, Joe Johnston, also directed the Rocketeer.
Mm-hmm.
And they had in the What If comic series, they had essentially Captain Carter had Steve Rogers as a Iron Man kind of guy. Like that was her transport to fly and jet around. And I was like, this is even cooler. Just give her a fucking jet pack and let her live her life. it was like Captain America and Rocketeer at the same time. And I was fucking down for it, but yeah, Black Bolt, they had Ansel Mount, reprising his role as Black Bolt. There was a
Inhumans.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
The Inhumans show that lasted less than a season,
which was terrible,
which
objectively bad.
I watched the first episode and I was like, this doesn't look great at
this
all.
This is not for me.
He was a good looking Black
and
Bolt.
And it had, Rhys Ifans, who was Ramsey Bolton in Game of Thrones. He's a great actor, but he was Maximus the Mad. But it, yeah, it he Black Bolt looks so much cooler in this. Obviously, we had Professor X and Patrick Stewart show up, and they had the X-Men animated series riff, which, like, my nipples, there was no glass on this earth that they couldn't cut.
Oh, then. Theater went wild.
But for me, again, we've seen Patrick Stewart as Professor X. They put him in a green suit and gave him the yellow chair. For me, the thing I went fucking absolutely batshit with was John fucking Krasinski as Mr. Fantastic.
Yes.
I was like, fuck, yes.
With the beard, too. It was like the older...
Perfect.
Older Fantastic Four.
They said they would... He was like, oh, no, you know, that's great that they did the fan casting of all this. But I always thought, I'm like, man, it would be perfect for John Krasinski to be Reed Richards, and then his wife, Emily Blunt, to be Invisible Woman. She's to me... If they're married and they're always doing one off of like, hey, you do a movie and then I'll do a movie and then I'll do whatever, they can have the kids there, both be in the movie, do whatever on set. Anyway, I want Emily Blunt as Invisible Woman, and then I like Zac Efron as Human Torch. Is one I've heard that's like kind of great.
Who would be Thing?
I've also heard Vin Diesel is Thing because he has the perfect gravelly voice.
Vin Diesel is also, he's Groot.
Yeah, but he only says, I am Groot. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, as the Thing, he would just say, but it's clobber time.
The Rock?
Dwayne The Rock Johnson?
Yes.
Black Adam?
As
Dwayne
Ben
The Rock Johnson?
I could see
Rock.
I could see Ray Romano was like, you know.
Ray Romano? I love it.
I am Groot.
Hey, oh, no. Ma, it's clobbering time.
Hey,
Ma.
I'm just saying.
I mainly wanted the excuse to make that Ray Romano sound into the microphone. Like, hey,
Ma.
But Marvel needs my help with Fantastic Four.
Casting? Everyone needs your help with Fantastic Four because nobody can make a good Fantastic Four.
I want to farm you out to DC. I mean, Marvel's doing okay. I want to get you over to DC.
No. Here's the thing. The Rock here's can play
the thing.
Fantastic Four, directed by Brad Bird. Good old Incredibles.
I'm okay with that.
He got kind of hosed with Tomorrowland.
He's got a lot of Simon Pegg in there somewhere, but I'm okay with that.
Brad Bird's a big Simon Pegg fan.
Simon Pegg not in the MCU? Because he should be.
Yeah.
But I mean, Brad Bird is directing Fantastic Four. And then what we need is a Doctor Doom origin movie on its own.
Mads Mikkelsen.
Yes. I do think also, we need a Doctor Doom origin movie.
So we have a Fantastic Four origin film on its own, standalone. He fights a villain, you know, most people don't give a shit about, Mole Man, because he's in the very first issue.
From
Mole
Man
is played by Danny DeVito.
I love it. Yeah. I love it so much.
Directed by Brad
Mads
Bird.
Mikkelsen. Because Mads Mikkelsen was a bad guy in Doctor Strange 1.
Kykilius.
Yeah. But they could do it because, I mean, you have...
He wears his mask.
If you can do Chris Evans as the Human Torch and Captain America, you can recast...
No, you can't though, because he was Human Torch in a non MCU movie.
It was
a Fox movie.
I think you could put some makeup prosthetics and make him look different enough.
I mean, you can get away with it. It would be a major retcon that I think the MCU would have to reckon with.
What about Alexander Skarsgård?
Anybody with like a Nordic name, I think would be fine.
I think Alexander Skarsgård would be good.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, he's maybe a big old
that's fair.
Hulking dude.
That's fair.
Yeah.
As Doctor Doom,
first banner.
You don't need a hulking dude to play Doctor Doom.
But I mean, he's imposing, not necessarily because of his physicality, but he's a big, like, he has a lot of
weight.
A big
presence.
You know, Doctor Doom is a Romani.
A hefty gentleman. You know. A Romani? Like Ray Romano?
Jeez.
Ray Romano. Hey, Ma.
Anyway, that was my biggest bonus was Mr. Fantastic.
They're drowning out my perfectly good Ray Romano.
Ray
there.
Romano, hey,
Sean, what'd you think? Illuminati, go for it.
So much to go from. Okay, so if you were to tell me that following the events of WandaVision and What If, that it was going to be a Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness movie, and following the events of Loki, everything that they did with Kang, this is not the movie that I would have expected.
No.
I would have expected something that would have been a lot more groundbreaking, would have been a lot more multiverse-y.
Unhinged.
Unhinged, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I think for a multiverse movie, it was incredibly linear. Like I said, they went to three dimensions total. I don't know. I felt whelmed by the totality of this movie.
I didn't love it.
I wanted more. I really enjoyed it. I did like a lot of the aspects of it. I liked a lot of the Sam Raimi of it. But I was expecting more out of Multiverse Madness. I expected more madness and less simplicity, I guess.
Basically bland storytelling.
Yeah. I thought that we were going to get...
storytelling was lacking. Yeah.
I thought we were going to get a Tom Cruise Iron Man.
I thought so, too.
Because way back in the day, he was the original pick for that.
Well, and you can't give us multiverse of Loki and see like all the different Lokis and all the different iterations of Loki and all the different like this variants. Is all the stuff that can happen and with multiverses, and these are all the different blah blah blahs, and all you really get out of it is just like, okay, here's a bunch of different Doctor Stranges with different haircuts.
Yeah,
like that doesn't fucking that doesn't
very
get
straightforward
me, that so, doesn't get me off the airstrip, you know?
Another part that again we were talking about Wanda not tracking from WandaVision to this film, and for me, I was, you know, my excuse is like, okay, she got the Darkhold, she was by herself for too long, it's essentially infected her,
well,
and at
yeah,
the end dark she destroys corrupting. It and it, you know, she isn't changed enough, I guess. I was hoping for more of a redemptive arc, but from way out in the trailers as well, one of Doctor Strange's biggest enemies is Nightmare. And they keep talking about like, oh, I keep waking up having the same nightmare. Mm-hmm. Wanda is having the same nightmare about her kids. I totally thought, I'm like, man, this will be great if they go in the entire fucking movie and they're like, wait, you're having this nightmare? I'm having this nightmare. Who, like, other people are having nightmares? What's yeah. up with nightmares?
Yeah.
I thought they were going to, like...
tie it in the mystic side. Yeah,
I thought they were going to tag him in to, like, maybe the last, like, 2 minutes of the film. Or even after the film, I thought they would have put him in the end credits. And it would have been Nightmare being like, all right, they never fucking put it together the entire time. And he'd be that's on a throne.
I feel like by calling it Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness, you set it up for something grander than what it actually was.
Her madness.
Yeah, there wasn't any madness. It wasn't Multiverse of Madness. It was Multiverse of Linear Storytelling.
It was
that's what you should have called it.
Multiverse of Meh-ness.
Multiverse of Meh-ness.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I thought... I by no stretch of the imagination think that Scarlet Witch is dead.
No, you don't see a body.
I don't think anybody who walked out of the theater thought she was dead.
No.
Her big thing in House of M is when she used her reality warping powers to say no more mutants, and she 86'd most of the population of mutants in Marvel to like 198 were still left. They basically. The concept is that mutants are not very prevalent in the Marvel universe, and so over time so many people had been like, oh, mutants is a thing that we can just say that's how superpowers
that's,
come to.
That's how powers
and
happen.
All of the writers from all of the whatever 60 years of X-Men have added in their own mutants, and it's all cool, but then you're like, fuck, there are so many mutants around the world. They were like, we need to make it special again. And so they kind of did this reset.
They nerfed it.
They did the exact same thing in
canonical
DC.
Retcon.
They did the exact same thing in DC where they were like, okay, there's Superman. He's the last Krypton. Oh, wait, no, there's Supergirl. There's General Zod and then his thugs.
And his dog.
Hey, there's also, the Crypto, the Supermutt, and there's other... So at some point in time, DC was like, well, we're doing a reboot. Oh, yeah, we need him to be the last one again. And they just 86'd all the rest that they had. Yeah. And they do this periodically, time to time.
Pruning.
100%.
Yeah.
But I so isn't also in the House of M, isn't there also a storyline where her kids go searching through the multiverse for her?
Yes. Well, after it's after House of M, and they think Scarlet Witch is dead. Basically, Magneto used Scarlet Witch to do House of M, where
which mutants, in the comics she is the daughter of Magneto.
Yes,
right. And which is not canon in the MCU.
Well, correct. They've the Disney acquisition of Marvel. What I hate about the films and all the behind the scene business shit is how that turns and affects the comic books. I'm like,
yeah,
the comic books should be its own thing. So you have a period of time where they're like, Scarlet Witch is a mutant. Her power is probability control.
Right.
And she calls them hex bolts, where she can change the probability of something happening. And then she goes off and she's also at the same time trying to learn magic because she has a predilection for that. And it's called chaos magic, so where she can cause chaos and still do her hex bolts. She essentially has powers from two different areas. She and Quicksilver are Magneto's children, twins. And then they changed it later to so that they could use Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver in Age of Ultron. They were like, oh no, here's a revelation in the comic books. You were never mutants. You were not Magneto's children, which allowed Disney to use those characters for Age of Ultron. Yeah,
the film rights were owned by Fox.
They 100% actively, they directed the ship of the comics so that they can use characters under this flag. And then now that they have them back, they can be like, oh, wait, no, wait, we fucked that up. I don't know where it is right now.
Yeah.
But I hate the fact that outside factors change the comic book trajectory.
Right. You know? It's the tail wagging the dog.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just, you know, her powers are definitely a lot. I think it's going to change the way that the MCU, she's going to be kind of like the cornerstone of how the MCU kind of changes over the next few years. You always need that sort of vehicle, mm-hmm. that like the means by which you tell a story. And I think for the first phase or the first couple phases of the MCU, it was Thanos. It's going to be Scarlet Witch for the next four-ish phases.
My other problem with that is I think they've done a great job with Wanda for now, that, you know, they've shown that she's super powerful. But if you're having the X-Men now in the MCU, eventually you're going to want to do the Dark Phoenix saga. And that's more of
which cosmic. They did in Fox.
They tried to. None of that counts. I don't know how to say this.
You would hope not.
They're like,
you would hope not.
It's
well, that, and it, and the Phoenix like powers tried, go beyond just the X-Men. If I can see a Namor,
yeah,
which I was expecting a Namor in this movie,
but Namor will be in Black Panther 2.
Yeah, but if I can just see a Namor in like super low cut pants with no shirt,
ooh,
Dark Phoenix style, fuck yeah!
But yeah, so they should have. They'll at least do the Dark Phoenix saga at some point, like it with the X-Men films, I'm sure, because they'll have 20 plus years of those films to go through.
Yeah.
But that's also another crazy powerful redhead doing shit. But she would be doing it more at the cosmic level. Like she would burn an entire universe doing, I mean, that's what she did in the comic books. But
look at that Namor. Like,
yeah.
His pants are low cut.
Super low.
Super low
cut. Mm-hmm.
So, real quick, once around, 1 to 10, what would you give this movie?
Yeah, I hate to say it all the time, just 7. Like, I liked it. It was good, but it wasn't great. There was all of the fan service that I absolutely loved, but it was just kind of a flash in the pan. But it was a promise of greater things to come.
You hated to love it so much.
Mm, yeah.
Sean?
So we've talked about it before, that there's kind of like a different rating scale for Marvel movies.
Oh, I'm sorry. Charlize Theron as Clea.
As Clea at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Yeah.
Which, if you're a big Doctor Strange fan, you're like, oh, wow, Clea. I know
is Doctor Strange's love interest.
Yeah. Everything I know about her is that she wears purple and has white hair and is basically a female Doctor Strange.
A lot like my prom date. Yeah.
She's like the niece of Dormammu, right?
Mm-hmm. No, that's Umar.
Okay, well, she's...
Dormammu, I've come to bargain.
Vaguely related to Dormammu, right?
Maybe?
I think she is. And she basically...
Umar is Dormammu's
She's from the
daughter.
Dark dimension.
She is, okay. I'll take your word for it.
As my understanding of it.
I don't know diddly poo.
But it wasn't nearly as cool as I thought. I was like, oh yeah, that makes sense that she's here. But again, the casting is great.
The end credit scenes were lackluster. Yeah. But
I love Bruce Campbell, but yeah.
I love Bruce Campbell too.
Yeah.
And the fact that he kept punching himself and he said, it's over. It's over.
Mm-hmm. That would have been excellent if Bruce Campbell was Nightmare at the end. And
that
he changed
would have been great.
That would have been perfect.
We should make movies.
Yep.
Yeah.
No, I think we've talked about it before. I think you have to kind of rate MCU movies on a different scale than other movies.
Yeah.
On the MCU scale, I put this one right around a 6. Mm-hmm. I think overall movie, it's like an 8. I'd watch it again. It's enjoyable.
Yeah.
I think it's going to have a big impact into the overall MCU zeitgeist. But as MCU movies go, this one was not high on the list.
Yeah. Well, even you had it as long as we're talking about Clea, Doctor Strange
we
at one point had a apprentice named Rintra, who was a giant green minotaur who showed up in this film. And, you know, with Marvel films, they have every time they have toys come out, those spoil the film. Way before anything else, they're like, oh, look at this Lego set. And you're like, oh, shit, what's this? I guess this character is going to come out.
Yeah.
They showed Rintra, the big green minotaur, and I'm like, oh, sweet, that'll be cool. Mm-hmm. Was not in the movie hardly at all.
Good-looking heifer, though.
Yeah.
Speaking of big old spoilers, there were leaks of this storyline. Like, there were leaks of the plot well before this actually came out. And one of the things that didn't actually make the final cut is one of the very first scenes. It's supposed to be Mordo going to, like, 616 Mordo going to 616 Scarlet Witch, trying to take her out, and then she decapitates him.
Oh.
That was something that was in the spoilers, and it's also in, I think, the teaser poster is, like, Mordo at the cabin of the Scarlet Witch. Not being decapitated, but approaching the cabin. And that was something that's on the poster, in the leaks, but didn't actually make the final cut.
And that was also, Disney went and re-edited the last episode of WandaVision, and it looks like Doctor Strange is floating down at the cabin at the end. So that could have been Mordo.
Yeah, and, because...
abandoned.
I think the whole thing was like, everyone's kind of like, what happened to 616 Mordo? Wasn't, at the end of Doctor Strange, wasn't he kind of like vowing to take out all magic users?
Yeah.
And then you never hear from him again, and you never see him show up in this movie again.
She'd be a tough one to take out.
And she was, because she decapitates him.
Yeah.
So that was kind of interesting. It might show up in the deleted scenes in the Blu-ray, DVD.
Nice. What do you think, Todd?
So you said 7. You said overall, what would you say?
I said overall 8, Marvel movie 6.
So 7.
Yeah, I'll throw it at a 7 average. Yeah.
Honestly, I gave it a 7.5. So
that's fair.
I mean, I don't know. It's like
fun.
Yeah, it was fun.
It's a great movie. Really, it's worth watching. It. Yeah. I'm glad I watched it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sad that I watched it.
Yeah. So
Danny Elfman did the music.
I really enjoyed that.
Great music.
The
great score.
It was, but like I really liked the song "Master of the Mystic" in credits from the first season, and they do a lot of hinting of it. But you know, Strange needs his own
theme.
Michael Giacchino did the first movie.
Yeah,
and he's great.
And I love
the harpsichord. Right,
I love Michael Giacchino because he does a lot of like character scores. So I think he did a really good job with the DC universe.
Mm-hmm.
With the work that he did with, like, it was Hans Zimmer that did the DC Universe for, like, Superman.
Yeah, Batman v Superman,
Wonder Woman.
Man of Steel, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Aquaman, I think he did also. I could be wrong, but I think...
What else did Michael Giacchino do?
He has done multiple, because he did the first Doctor Strange. And then I'm trying to think if he has done other... We have to go back and look at this, but I think he's done other Marvel movies.
Yeah.
He's done...
He has.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He is everywhere. He's done Star Wars. He's done...
He fucks.
Yes. Outstanding composer.
Yep. Danny Elfman, also outstanding composer.
Yeah. It's been another another mini episode of CinemaVino. Not really a mini episode of CinemaVino because we're now past the 40-minute mark. But we love you guys. Sean Jordan, Travis Budd.
Kisses.
We thank you very much.
On the bend.
And we will see you guys next week. We're going to do Kill Bill Volumes 1 and 2.
By the hoary hosts of Hoggoth.
Yes. By Grabthar's Hammer.
By Crimson Bands of Sidorak.
Whatever. Not with a bang, but with a whimper. We will see you guys really soon.
Bye.
Goober.
If you're interested in starting your very own podcast, Blueberry is one of the top hosting companies in the world. You can get your first month free with Blueberry by using the promo code CinemaVino. You can also use the hosting estimator on their site to determine the best plan for you. And don't forget, that's CinemaVino to get your first month free.
Be sure to listen, rate, and subscribe at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Our website is at cinemavino.net, and reviews of these movies can be found at toddwoffordmovies.com.